ladies and gentlemen, what's going on? Welcome to episode 132 of the It's Obvious Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Preston Pugh, and I am joined across the internet by my best friend, Garrett Drake.
This is by far the most bizarre podcast we will have ever done in the history of this channel.
Maybe.
Easily. We're communicating via Skype. Preston's at his house. I'm at my own. All by myself in my room. He's all by himself in his room. And it's kind of strange, but I'm looking at you as if you were sitting right across from me on Skype, because I've propped my laptop up on a box here, and you're at eye level. So it's almost like you're really here with me, Preston.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I feel the same as well. It'd be really cool if we could do these podcasts in VR. So when we're not together, you know, we could really feel like we're there.
Absolutely. I'm sure it's only a matter of time till we can do that. And I also apologize that there's no video this week. We just thought it was kind of pointless, and it'd be strange if the shot was of me in our normal space with just a floating head of Preston. Now, granted, it'd be a hilarious visual, but it's just a whole lot of work on my end that I felt like it was unnecessary. So it's just a thumbnail this week, but the video version still exists here on YouTube for those of you that enjoy listening to podcasts on YouTube like I do. It's weird how I never use iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Audio Boom, anything to listen to podcasts. I always listen on YouTube.
Yeah, I need to start using other apps to do it, because when I'm driving and I'm listening to a podcast on YouTube and I need to be looking at, you know, directions and stuff.
Mm-hmm. You have to back in and out of it.
You have to back in and out. And I mean, when you have to turn, the direction will pop up at the top of the screen. But it's always, you know, as you're like passing by the turn, so it's always too late. So I probably need to start getting my stuff on iTunes just for reasons like that. But it's just so convenient, you know, to hop on YouTube and just, you know, shove it in your pocket or whatever. So
yeah.
But
whatever, man.
Yeah, whatever, man. We're at least making it happen. So if you're listening to us via, well, anything besides YouTube, this should sound just like a normal podcast. So, but
hopefully,
anyways,
yeah. Especially coming from two entirely different mixers and two entirely different spaces, it's going to sound probably a little bit strange. Every time one of us talks, it sounds like we're in a different place.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I listen to some podcasts where there's like four or five different people from like Google Hangouts with different mics and stuff, and you know, that's whatever. So
we'll power through.
Yeah, we shouldn't be too bad. But anyways, yes, it's I'm glad to be talking with you, Garrett. How I know I just saw you yesterday, but how's your week been?
Fine. Played a handful of video games, worked a little bit, and we got our new mixer finally. It's the Personas Studio Live AR-12, not the AR-15 like the firearm, but the AR-12.
Ah.
And it's pretty solid. It's a snazzy little mixer here. I'm still what I would call beta testing it at the moment. We did a test run with our Star Wars spoiler-free review, which is live now on youtube.com/itsobviousgaming. Spoiler discussion coming very soon, depending on when you're listening to this episode. If you're listening to it later in the week, then our spoiler discussion is live on youtube.com/itsobviousgaming. I myself have a lot to say about that movie. We're essentially breaking down the entire film from start to finish, talking all things The Last Jedi. So we encourage you guys to join us for that if you're a Star Wars junkie like ourselves. But the mixer itself is interesting, because in comparison to the previous one, the audio itself is much clearer. It's crystal clear, but oddly enough, it picks up a lot more room noise. So it almost sounds like I'm in a cathedral. So I'm trying to work around that without actually having an acoustically treated room. So whatever, but it's much better than our previous one. We can now move forward without the weird alien noises mixed into our audio. Hopefully.
That sounds fantastic.
You're using the old mixer now.
Yeah. So I'll just have the alien voice.
So it'll still slightly be there. Yeah.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say, I follow Harley. I forgot his last name. The giant behemoth of a man from Epic Mealtime. On Twitter, and he's a massive Star Wars fan, absolute just insane about Star Wars, and he loved The Last Jedi, says it's 10 out of 10, flawless movie, and he says that there are absolutely no plot holes and that he is going to make a video proving so.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I'm very, very interested to see how we could, how, just how, the if you've watched our spoiler-free discussion, all the We talk about numerous plot holes. It just blows my mind that somebody could say that there's not any, and they can explain it. So yeah. I'm really interested to see that.
Technically speaking, in The Last Jedi, there aren't necessarily plot holes, but in the grand scheme of the whole new trilogy, there are still plot holes that exists. Mm-hmm. That exists, I should say. So, and Last Jedi, I can see why one would argue that there aren't technically any plot holes in that contained story, but in the whole spectrum of the whole new trilogy, yeah, there are plot holes. That makes sense.
I guess I would just like somebody to explain why things that happen aren't as stupid as I think they are. So, right. Yeah.
I've had a few revelations since our spoiler-free discussion, listening to additional spoiler reviews about specific characters. Holdo, specifically the lady with the purple hair, there's more to her story that I still think is unacceptable because 90% of the audience has not read the novels and comics that pertain to these characters that were just introduced in Last Jedi to some people for the very first time, whereas really hardcore Star Wars fans are already aware of some of these people. I don't think that excuses certain portions of the movie, but we'll talk about that in the spoiler review.
Yeah. So we don't need to
look forward to it
too off on that.
Yeah. We did see Star Wars though. I saw it twice and I mostly enjoyed it. It's almost like a 50-50 split for me. I mean, we won't rehash our spoiler-free review if you guys have already heard it, but as far as Star Wars The Last Jedi is concerned, I liked a good bit of it, but I also disliked quite a bit of it as well.
I'm excited to go see it next weekend. I'm looking forward to it. So
I'll at least see it one more time while it's in theaters.
Yeah.
So
cool. Will you play any games?
I did, yeah. I played a decent bit of PUBG. I have some good matches and I have some bad matches in that game. Mostly bad matches, but I still have an absolute blast every single time, regardless of how I perform. I just think it's a really fun game. Best match I played this week, which for me, this is very exciting. To others, this may just sound like another day in the life of your PUBG experience. But I happened to drop into a match with, I think it was like 98 people in it. And I just happened to drop right next to where a plane dropped a crate at the very beginning. So of course, I ran right over to the crate, and right before I began looting it, I saw a guy running up the hill because it kind of landed on a hill, and I was behind the box on the higher portion of the hill, and this guy was running up the hill towards it. So I hid behind it, and as soon as he got close, I popped out and shot him in the head, and it killed him instantly. I was like, well, that was satisfying. So then I grabbed out, I don't even know what it's called, like the best sniper in the game, I've been told. I grabbed it out of this crate, and I ended up sniping like 6 people throughout the match, made it into the top 10, and eventually died because I got shot in the back like I always do. But super fun, and we also streamed PUBG whatever night that was when you and I tried to stream. It was disastrous at first, but I ended up solving the issue. So thankfully going forward, I have discovered what that problem is and I know how to prevent it every single time now. So our stream should be really solid going forward. We had a fun 3+ hour stream. I was joined by between 8 and 15 of you throughout the 3.5 hour period, but it was a ton of fun. We appreciate you guys hanging out on those streams. And we hope you join us for additional ones down the road, probably this week as well, because I've been enjoying streaming. It's been awesome. So, but yeah, that's what I did in addition to the Champion's Ballad DLC from Zelda. I reviewed it for COD Connected, gave it a 90 out of 100, which equates to a 9 out of 10. But I loved it. I almost gave it a 95, but apparently some of the things I said in the review, we had to notch it down to a 90 out of 100. But overall, I thought it was great. I loved the 16 new shrines that are presented in the game. I mean, the shrines were one of my favorite parts of Breath of the Wild in general, just the way they challenge you with the tools at your disposal with the Sheikah Slate and just your skill as a player as far as determining how you're going to tackle each situation. I know there were 2 or 3 shrines out of these new ones that I definitely cheesed in a way that I was not supposed to do them, but I figured out a way with either dropping weapons to connect electricity or doing other strange things to make things work for me. So that's one of the strongest assets of Zelda to me, or at least Breath of the Wild, are the creative situations like that that you can kind of make your own. So a lot of situations like that throughout the DLC. My favorite part, I think, was the very beginning where you acquire the one-hit obliterator that kind of looks like Lumiere from Beauty and the Beast. But I love how it depletes your health to 1/4 of 1 heart, and you can kill everything in one hit. But if you use it 3 times, it kills you instantly. So you have to be very strategic as to when you use that weapon. And it was also just, it felt like a very old-school challenge to me where I had very little health, and I had to complete the challenges outside the shrines to spawn them, and then I had to get through the shrine itself with that little of health. So it was genuinely challenging, and I enjoyed it for that, because rarely do games give you that sort of a challenge that's fair, but at the same time, feasible. Like, whereas Wolfenstein, for example, the hardest difficulty, I think it's just absurd. But in Zelda here, I loved that genuine challenge there, so that was fun. Story-wise, same with Breath of the Wild's main story, didn't really grab me whatsoever. But I did like to see the little cutscenes of the champions being recruited by Zelda prior, or 100 years prior to Calamity Ganon's battle and everything. So that was fun. And the final labyrinth, Divine Beast, which I don't want to spoil for those that don't want it spoiled. I wouldn't say it was disappointing. It lived up to the same expectations of the previous ones, where it was surprisingly small and easier than I thought it would be. I'd figure with Nintendo, this last one, they'd take the feedback from fans of Breath of the Wild and maybe make the final Divine Beast like a final dungeon, like from a traditional Zelda game, make it lengthier with additional challenges. But it felt like any of the other ones, but it was still fun. Final boss was pretty good. I don't know if I'd call it like a surprise or anything, but I thought it was cool who you fight at the end, and it was a fun battle, I guess. It was probably one of the more interesting boss battles throughout the game. The Master Cycle Zero is pretty rad. It's still the most bizarre thing I've ever seen in a Zelda game, but it's a ton of fun to drive around. It's a little stiff, but I love the bunny hop mechanic. I naturally took it down the giant mountain over by Rito Village through the snow, where you can typically shield surf, but I took the dirt scooter, I should call it, down those mountains. I launched it off that giant waterfall over on Zora's Domain or whatever and completely went off and landed in the water. That was fun. But yeah, it's great. The new outfits are cool. I like Phantom Ganon's outfit specifically. That's a cool one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I beat it in about 3 days, and I just had a ton of fun with it. It reminded me why I love that game so much. And surprisingly, the final cutscene was very emotional for me. Not because I was attached to any of the characters, but I think I was just reminded of the grand adventure I'd had in Breath of the Wild throughout 2017. 100-plus hours of it. So it was awesome, and I loved it. So I highly recommend it to those who either... I don't know why you'd be hesitant if you love Breath of the Wild, why you'd be hesitant to pick up Champion's Ballad. But when you get to it, I will say that, personally, I think it's totally worth it. It was fun.
Awesome.
Yeah. I only played two more things, but I was going to let you go because I'm talking a lot.
Yeah, I played a little bit of Champion's Ballad as well. I actually just I just finished three of the tasks that they give you for the bird people, the Rito people. So I still have two more left. So I've been kind of taking it slow with Zelda. I just have a lot of stuff on my plate, and I really would like to save Zelda and Xenoblade, especially kind of for Christmas break, as I try and mop up the rest of the things on my backlog before Christmas, but that's looking like that's probably not going to happen. I have so much stuff to play. So I beat Nier for the first time. I got ending A, I believe, and it was pretty short, but I kind of expected that because you're supposed to play it a few times. Well, that's what I've heard, at least, so I'm expecting that. And it ended with a lot of questions left hanging. I expected that as well. I started it again, you're playing as a new character, and you're kind of retreading through the same thing that the first playthrough did, but there's extra cutscenes that are adding things to the story and stuff. So that's all. That's pretty much all I'm going to say, just so I don't spoil anything, but I'm enjoying that a lot. I'm not really sure how long each playthrough takes, so I don't know how, like, in the end, how long getting everything is going to take, but it looks like I'm probably not going to be able to do that before Christmas, which was my plan, but we'll see. I'll try my best to knock it out the rest of this week. But also, Fallout 4 in VR was released this week, and I saw it released. I was watching some people play it, and it just kind of hit me, for as big of a Fallout fan as I am, that I'm not going to be playing Fallout 4 VR. And it kind of made me sad. So I decided to buy a Vive to play Fallout VR, which I don't think was a stupid decision to buy something, you know, as expensive as a Vive just to play one game. But I kind of just pulled the trigger and did it, just hoping that I would find it amazing and I would find other games. And so far, I'm very satisfied. It came with a copy of Fallout 4 VR, so that was the first thing I booted up, and It's pretty much the same as Skyrim VR, except, you know, it doesn't look as bad. It obviously looks worse than Fallout 4, but it looks way better than Skyrim VR. It's not distracting. It's completely suffices, so it looks fine. And I guess this is kind of just the Vive in particular, but just having the what are the Vive controllers called? Are they even called anything?
I have no idea.
Yeah, we'll just call them the Vive controllers. They are light years better than PlayStation VR controllers. Not to hate on PlayStation VR, because I love my PS VR, but it's
far superior.
Yes, yeah, it's a fact. Just having the IR sensors in your room, they're able to pick up the slightest move, like literally the most minuscule movements you make, and you're able to raise your hands as high as you want to, touch the floor, go anywhere, whereas in PlayStation VR you have to stay in, you know, the camera's bubble. Which I don't want to put down PlayStation VR, because it's fine for what it is and for the technology that it's, you know, it's working with the camera and stuff. It is awesome. I've played super hot VR, you know, all the way through, and PS4 you did as well, and it was a great time. But there were those moments where you're so caught up in the game and you want to extend your arms farther, or you want to move to the left or right or duck more. And there's that problem of you look to your right and your arm has gone floating off into the, you know, into the air or something, because the camera has lost track of it. And that never happens in Oculus 5. It really immerses you into, because you're not thinking about restricting your movements, you're not thinking about working with, you know, the technology that you have. As in PlayStation VR, I know, like I said, I'm in this bubble and I have to always be conscious of, all right, I can't, you know, reach too far out and stuff. I have to stay in this little orb that I'm in. So yeah, that's incredible, and I absolutely love that, and it makes Fallout 4 a much funner like I like Skyrim VR, but it makes it a much funner experience, primarily due to that ultimate control, knowing that I can aim in any direction I want to, smack things with melee weapons, it's, you know, do it as hard as I want to, and not worry about the camera, you know, not tracking the controls and stuff. But it is, you know, it's Fallout 4, it's the entirety of the game. There's, you know, different control options, there's teleporting and movement, and I've actually gone back and forth between them just to see which one I like. Typically I just go to the fluid movement, but I used the teleport for a little bit just to see if I liked it, and I actually liked it more than I thought I would, but I'm ultimately sticking with the directional movement. And there are cool things. It's not as I've seen a lot of people complain that there it's pretty much just Fallout 4 with a VR skin. There isn't enough VR things, like you don't actually reload your weapon, you don't actually pick up objects and stuff. But you just kind of, like in Skyrim VR, you point your hand towards specific things and a menu pops up. There are a lot of menus, so I understand the criticisms, but I don't mind too much. The cool things are lifting your left hand up to do your Pip-Boy. That's really cool. And VATS is actually fun in this mode. I've been using it way more than I ever did in just the regular version. And just being able to use any weapon that you have in your hand as a melee object as well is really fun. So when a feral ghoul runs up on you, you can just smack him with your pistol. Like, your instincts come out and you just smack him in the head with your pistol, and it actually does, you know, it actually does something. So that's really awesome. But yeah, I'm enjoying it a lot. I really want Skyrim VR to eventually come to PC as well, because I think that would be freaking awesome. Just being able to shoot a bow better, more accurately, raising your sword and shield better, and it not be, you know, finicky in the slightest. So yeah, I'm enjoying it a lot. So I would like to play through a lot of it, but I really hope I don't get halfway through it or whatever. And that's, let me back up a little. That's kind of the main problem, is I've already played Fallout 4 several times. So I hope I'm just not, even though VR is freaking awesome, I hope I'm just already not kind of tired of the game itself, you know? I mean, as cool as VR is, I've already played the game. So, but I picked up a few more games. I unfortunately forgot the name of two of them. One was a very, very short game where I fight titans, these, you know, massive titans, and you can load yourself out with guns and bows and swords, and actually how you equip the weapons is really cool. To pull your sword out, you actually reach for your right shoulder and pull your sword out. Same thing with your shield, your guns are at your hips, and the titans are huge, and they, you know, they'll swing your hand down and you actually have to duck below them and fight them and stuff. So it's pretty much just you fight some grunts and then a big boss comes out, and I beat it within like 40 minutes. So it's not too big of a game, but it was pretty fun. I forgot the name of it. It's Titan something. It was on the HTC Vive store. I played some ninja game that I've heard is kind of like Raw Data. I haven't played that yet, but I've heard that's amazing. And it was really fun. Then I played the new LA Noire VR game, and I haven't heard any buzz around that. I know when it was initially revealed with the Switch and PS4 and Xbox One, you know, remastered versions, they said they were coming out with a Vive exclusive LA Noire game, and you know, that sounded cool. I didn't have a Vive, so I didn't think about it. But as I was browsing the store the day after I got it, I saw that, and I love LA Noire, so I, you know, I immediately bought it, and it was like $30. I expected it to just be an I just expected it to be an experience where, you know, you sit down, you interrogate some people, you might do a shooting gallery on rail shooter, you might drive a little bit, you know, just I mean you can imagine what LA Noire would be like as, you know, a VR experience. But I've only played two missions and my expectations have already been blown out of the water. I don't know how long the game is, but the two missions I've played, they aren't just little experiences. You can fully explore the world as far as I've seen. I haven't completely gone out of my way to explore everything, but well, there's not really nothing to even do in LA Noire's open world. But from what I've seen, you can drive anywhere, you can get out of your vehicle, freely walk around the crime scenes, pick up the objects that are clues and stuff, you know, flip them in your hand, look at them. And unlike other VR games, this one actually shows you your entire body. So it you know, really helps with the immersion, because you know, you look down, your feet are there. When you're walking, your feet are moving. Even small little details, like when you reach your arm out, your sleeve actually comes back, like it gets tighter. And when you pull your hand towards you, the sleeves fall forward. So little details like that really, you know, sell you on the immersion. You see you see your fedora slightly at the top of your eyes, like it's, you know, you're actually wearing one. Yeah, they're just little things like that are awesome. Same thing with, there's a small scene at the beginning of the game where you have to go stop a robbery and you have to use a shotgun, and you know actually grab it with both hands. After every shot, you have to pump it. When you're out of ammo, you have to reach for your belt and load each, you know, slug one by one. So that's really cool. There's some fist fighting, and that's by far one of the coolest things I've done in VR. Like I said, with the one-to-one motion controls, being able to put your hands up and weave and dodge around the throws that the other guy's, you know, throwing at you, and you could do uppercuts and straights, and they completely react to it. It just feels awesome. I don't think I've ever even had a fist fight in any VR game before, so this is my first one, but it's amazing. So it's exceeded my expectations, you know, immensely. So I'm really, really enjoying that as a person that liked LA Noire. And of course, there's the, you sit down at the table and interrogate them. They have changed it a little bit. There's no longer a doubt, lie, and truth or accuse option. There's just good cop, bad cop, and accuse. And it's a little confusing the first time you actually sit down with somebody and interrogate them. If you have to do it correctly, or else they make you start it over. And I started over three times because I I just had to go through every option to see what I was supposed to do. So that was a little confusing. So hopefully as I continue to play it, I'll wrap my head around what I'm actually supposed to do in these certain situations. And there's still the hilarious faces that people make when they're lying, which looks even funnier in VR, you know, looking them in the face.
Yeah.
So, and then it also has a cool mechanic where it asks you, before you get to a new scene, it shows you the outline of your room, which you actually set with your Vive, so you know, you don't go running into your wall or anything. So before every mission starts, it shows you the outline of your room, and it tells you, all right, walk towards the center of the room and push the menu button to just say that you're ready to go after every scene, just so you start every scene in a good position, you know, so you don't walk off into a wall before a scene starts and you know, knock yourself out or something. But it also asks you, before you get in your car, it goes black and shows you the border, would you like to sit down before you drive? And you can sit down, push the button, and it'll redo everything to notice that you're sitting down and make it, you know, adjust it to where that feels natural. So that's really cool, sitting down. And I have a couch right inside of my box that I made. So whenever, you know, I get into a car, I just walk over to my couch and sit down like I got into the car. So it is really cool standing up and sitting down depending on what you're doing. So that's pretty much all I can say, but it's definitely one of the most immersive VR games that I have played for sure. And yeah, so I only got it a few days ago, so I'll definitely be playing a lot more things, but so far it is really, really freaking cool, and I like it a whole lot. I played Battlefront 2 last night with my uncle. We played a few matches. I like it. It's fun.
Did you play the Last Jedi stuff?
I think so. I think we played one strike match on one of those maps. Or is it just the one map that's set on the salt planet? I don't even know what... No. I don't think we played it. We played on Jakku. That's not okay. The DLC. Yeah. We were just playing Strike. I actually had trouble booting up Star Wars. Battlefront 2 has the dumbest problem. And I actually found it out with PUBG as well. Whenever I alt-tab out of the game to multitask, it completely crashes the game and it does not allow me to boot the game again until I restart my computer like 5 times and I go into...
That's weird.
Yeah, and I go into the options and turn certain things off. I think in Star Wars' case, DirectX 12 gets turned on when I multitask and I can't run DirectX 12 while I'm in 4K and it messes with the game and it won't boot. So I have to, you know, manually go in the notepad of the boot options of the game and turn DirectX 12 off. So once we finally got that working after an hour, and it was so frustrating, it was essentially when we were trying to stream the other night and all I wanted to do was just play, but we were having to figure stuff out. That was essentially what was going on. Very frustrating. So once we get it up and running, we play, and we do fairly good. We won, I think, every single match, and me and him did really good, and we had a lot of fun. I still have no clue about the progression system. I have like 15 loot boxes I haven't opened yet, and I don't even care to, because I don't even know what any of it does. So I'm just joining in, playing as an assault guy, and you know, just shooting guys, and it's fun. So we played that for about an hour, then we hopped into PUBG for a little bit, and then of course I had the problems in the test server alt tabbing out, but the regular version would open for me fine. So we played about 2 matches, and our first match we got in the top 5 as a duo, and I killed one guy and his buddy came up and killed both of us, unfortunately. So that was a lot of fun. We were freaking out because I actually had a glimmer of hope. I thought that we were going to the win, especially when I took out one of the last guys. I just had a surge of, you know, excitement, thinking, oh man, we can actually do this. And I got owned like 5 seconds later. So, and then the next one, I think it was, I don't even remember what happened. So I don't think anything good really happened. So that was pretty much my experience in multiplayer. And I jumped into Grand Theft Auto Online for a little bit, but I have no clue what's going on. So I need to read something or watch a video to figure out how I actually need to get started in that game.
Yeah, I forgot I went back to that as well this week for a little bit. I just did a bunch of races because I couldn't find a single mission to get in on.
Yeah, I did one mission. I don't know. I went into the start menu and went to jobs and just clicked random mission, and it threw me in with 3 other guys. And we had to steal these motorcycles called Predators. Mm-hmm. And the motorcycles have airplane wings that shoot out of the side. So I thought you could actually fly into the air with these motorcycles, but I couldn't figure out how to do it. So I just drove them.
Did the other guys do it?
Oh, they left. They were so fast. They were out of there. So I don't know if they did. They might have. That's probably how, you know, they were so far away from me. But we just had to steal these bikes and return them to a cargo freight airplane or whatever they're called.
That sounds fun.
Oh, it was awesome. It was so fun. I love playing on PC. Just,
yeah, it feels incredible on PC.
Yeah, especially just aiming, because aiming has always been really kind of finicky with console. As much as I love Rockstar's games, they're, besides Max Payne in Red Dead and Grand Theft Auto, the aiming is a little wonky. So it's really cool to just, you know, aim with a mouse to shoot.
Right.
Yeah, but I really like that game, and it looks insane for that game. It's not that it's ancient, but it is a little old, and graphically it holds up so freaking well. And 4K, everything, you know, maxed up, it looks insane.
I'm sure it does.
Yeah, but I'd like to get into that. I see people stream the Doomsday heist that just came out, and I've watched a few videos of it, and it looks a lot of fun. So who knows when I can, if I'll ever actually get to the high level stuff like that. Because I have so much stuff on my backlog, but you know, I would, you know, I'd like to at least try some point.
Definitely. You and I need to team up and play that a little bit like we used to.
Yeah, I agree. That'd be fun. But that's pretty much all I played this week for the most part. I mean, I dabbled in Xenoblade, but barely got anywhere. That game's really, really fun. So hopefully this Christmas break I can play a little more. But yeah, that's about it for me.
Is that what's on your TV behind you?
Yes.
Xenoblade?
Yeah, it is.
Nice. That was a good guess on my end. It looks like it'd be a Xenoblade game.
Yes, it is.
That's cool. I dabbled in a bit more Horizon. I'm at the very end of that Frozen Wilds DLC, but I just still haven't beaten it because I play it for about 5 minutes a week. And that's not an exaggeration. I played it for about 5 minutes this week. I killed the Thunderjaw in the main story at the end, where you break into that facility.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I'm at. So I imagine I'm very close to the end.
Are you playing so little of it because Zelda's so good and you can't bring yourself to play this game?
Yeah, not because I had to play Zelda. And that's not the reason at all. I mean, I loved every second of Zelda. I didn't want to step away from it while I was playing it, just because I hadn't even really thought about the game since the Master Trials DLC. And I really enjoyed that as well. I just hadn't touched the game since then. So I was excited to get back to it. Other than that, you and I played Monster Hunter World, the beta, a bit on PS4 for a video that's also live on youtube.com/itsobviousgaming. We took on Anagiroth or something.
Yeah, Anagiroth. I completely
furry
forgot.
T-Rex.
We played that.
And we failed to kill it for about an hour and a half until experienced Monster Hunters Kyle and Michael showed up to take it on with us, and we managed to succeed. But really cool game. Very deep, I can tell, too, as far as the systems and the lore and all the items that you can use and crafting armor and so on and so forth. I mean, I know nothing about Monster Hunter. This is the first taste of Monster Hunter I've ever had. So I'm definitely going to play the full game and try to understand it as I go. Because according to Kyle, it's not very courteous in introducing new players to the game itself. So I'll try to work my way through it, but I really enjoyed the beta and I'd like to get into the deep end of it, really get to know it as much as I can. So I'm excited about that. But that's all I played, Preston. I did not do anything else this week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. At least
you got anything else?
No. That's about it. I did a whole lot of just bouncing between a lot of things. And that's my biggest problem right now, is I'm a madman on Steam sales, just like we've heard of the, you know, infamous Steam sales of people buying too many things and never being able to finish everything. I'm
right,
completely falling into that trap. Whereas, you know, just in terms of Grand Theft Auto was on sale, which is why I bought it. There's countless other little games that I haven't even played, and I don't even know if I ever will play. But yeah, I just have so much stuff in my backlog, and it is so hard for me to just put my blinders on and sit down and just finish one game. And I think one of the main reasons that is because all the games on my backlog are so long. I can't just sit down and knock them out. There's no way I'm going to sit down and play Xenoblade and just, yeah, I'm going to knock this out in a few days. There's no way. That's like a month commitment with the time that I have to, right, you know, knock out Xenoblade. You know, Zelda's not as daunting as that, but, you know, I'm not going to finish that in, you know, a few hours. Same with Nier. So, yeah, it's just, it's very stressful having this many games to play. So, yeah, hopefully I just, I know I talked about it, I think the other podcast, I really wish there was a game that just I became obsessed with and that's all I wanted to play, and all every other game just didn't really matter to me. I long for those days. So I really want to just knock out everything I have and get to a point where I'm actually excited for the next thing coming out. Because as of now, I would love everything to just get delayed so I can just focus, you know, on what I'm doing. Because I'm sure by the time Monster Hunter comes out, I'm not going to be done. And then Far Cry is going to come out and I'm not going to be done. And I'm going to see some stuff for that game and it's going to interest me. And I'm going to, you know, jump into that. And then by the time we know it, God of War is out. And, you know, it's just a snowball that I hope I can, you know, take care of before it gets too late. So
yeah, good luck with that. I know for a doubt, or I know for a fact, there are many games I'll probably never finish in this lifetime because I just don't have the time.
Yeah,
Persona is probably one of them. I hate to say it.
That's so sad.
If I played it every day until I finished it, mm-hmm, I would maybe beat it. I'm not even trying to be funny. Maybe in a few years. That's how little time I have to play games for fun.
Yeah.
So there's no way. I want to get through Assassin's Creed, but it's the exact same situation. That game's so long, and yes, I have maybe a couple minutes to play it a week, unless we were like huge streamers and we could just play any game we want to on a stream and like kill two birds with one stone where we're streaming and hanging out with people but also completing a game at the same time. That'd be a different story. Yeah. But we can't do that.
The
so
thing with Assassin's Creed, at least though, is the main story isn't that bad. It actually, right, that actually kind of surprised me how short it was.
Maybe I'll just blaze through that then at the, yeah, very least. That's the thing. I don't want to just play a game to be like, oh, I completed the story. Like, I really, yeah, want to savor it, you know?
Yeah, no, I understand for sure.
I think it deserves that too, especially with it all does. That's packed into it.
It does. It really does. But yeah, anything else you'd like to talk to discuss before we jump into some news?
I don't think so. There's nothing else going on my end. Nothing exciting, at least.
Yeah, same here. Well, this is the It's Obvious Gaming Podcast, the show where my two best friends and I get together every single week to discuss video games, obviously. You can find all of our content, including the video version of this podcast or the still image version of this podcast, over at youtube.com/It's Obvious Gaming. If YouTube is not good for you or you'd like to take us on the go, you can find this podcast weekly on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Audio Boom, and other podcasting services. Please check the description down below for timestamps to skip throughout the podcast, links to our social media pages, our PlayStation community, Xbox Club, and other means to connect with us. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the channel and be sure to like and comment down below to get involved with the It's Obvious community. Doing so helps us out tremendously, and we would forever be in your debt. With all that out of the way, hey man, what's the news?
So Preston, I read the headline of a GameSpot article earlier this week and nearly pooped, but minutes later I was thoroughly disappointed as I began reading into it, and that has to do with the Harry Potter light RPG coming to mobile, iOS and Android in 2018, titled Harry Potter Hogwarts Mystery. This one comes from Oscar Deus of GameSpot. Most exciting / heartbreaking story of the week for me. He says, quote, in addition to their Pokemon Go-like Wizards Unite game, Warner Bros. Is developing a title called Harry Potter Hogwarts Mystery. The new title is a narrative RPG set in the famous school for witchcraft and wizardry, and it's coming to mobile in 2018. Warner Bros. And developer Jam City say the new game will allow players to create their own character and experience life as a Hogwarts student by progressing through their years at the school. Along the way, you can participate in magical classes such as Defense Against the Dark Arts, Potions, and Dueling Club. Warner Bros. Hasn't revealed anything more about the Hogwarts mystery as of yet, except that it's coming to iOS and Android, end quote. So it's funny because this is exactly how we described we'd want our Harry Potter RPG to be.
Yep.
But it's coming to mobile, which yep. sucks. But hopefully this game will explode and then some publisher will see that they need a game developed like this. Perhaps a Warner Bros. Studio. We'll get Rocksteady to do it, dude. Like, who's like a first party studio with Warner Brothers? Do we know? Or do they all just have third party studios?
I'm not sure. I know that WB publishes the Witcher games over here, so maybe we could get CD Projekt Red
yeah.
on some Harry Potter.
Cyberpunk, they'll move on to Harry Potter.
Yeah, so 2030.
I'm definitely going to play this. Don't get me wrong. I hope it's awesome. Even for a mobile game, I hope it's fun.
Yeah.
But, you know, on a mobile game, it's got to be limited. I mean, they claim it's going to be a narrative adventure. Like, it won't just be a simple point and click type of game. But
Didn't I read in this article? Or maybe it was another one where they did say that they would soon, or they are working on a console Harry Potter title.
I certainly hope so. I did not read that in this article. Well, maybe they did. I just got so lazy by the end of that. Once I heard mobile, I just didn't care about anything else. So I grabbed like the first paragraph. But that'd be great if they're working on a console title. I still think one of the most underrated Harry Potter games of all time was the Quidditch World Cup game that you and I used to play. I think it was on GameCube. I mean, that was basically FIFA on broomsticks. And I loved it as a kid.
Yeah.
So I think that'd be great to have a return of that. But yeah, Harry Potter RPG on console and PC and stuff, like a full-on high-caliber RPG for the Harry Potter universe could be fantastic. But yeah.
Yeah, I do.
Do you have any other thoughts on that? I mean, are you going to at least try it?
Oh, yeah, I'll at least try it. It is disappointing, you know, reading that headline. Like you said, reading the article is exactly, you know, what we've always wanted in a Harry Potter game. And to see that it's a mobile game was absolutely heartbreaking. But this is from a GameSpot article where they're talking about the Portkey Games developer. And
that's great development studio title.
Oh, it is.
Portkey Games. It's awesome.
This is a quote from Portkey Games saying that they are going to have a series of mobile and console game experiences. So there is still hope.
Now, is Portkey a relatively new studio? They've been around a while.
I think they were put together to make Harry Potter games.
I mean, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
I love that. I hope they're super talented.
Yeah, I would hope so too. I don't know. WB is... Oh, man. He'd be yawning.
They published some awesome video games.
Yeah, WB knows, you know, what they're doing. They published the Injustice and Mortal Kombat series now. They published The Witcher. They published the Middle Earth games. They published Rocksteady's Batman games. You know, so they...
Now, if only they could get their act together on the big screen like they have in video games, then we'd be rocking and rolling.
Yeah. So I somewhat trust them. We'll see.
As do I. I'm going to hold out hope for now, Preston.
Yes.
Other cool news. Predator's making his way to Ghost Recon Wildlands. Apparently, you can hunt him. He has all these stealth abilities and advanced weapons and such. And he's live through the 14th, which already happened, obviously, through early January. And he has unique skills and brings special challenges to see players solo or with up to 4 players in co-op hunting the creature. And if you kill him, you're rewarded with exclusive items, including the Predator mask itself, which features Predator Vision to help you fully embrace your inner hunter. And the Predator pack, available in the in-game store, and introduces 15 new customization items inspired by the original movie, including weapons and a new close combat move. That's cool. I thought that was awesome. That one, you can fight the Predator in Ghost Recon, but you can also get his mask that has that all the special vision ability as well.
Yeah.
I just think that's super cool. That's still a game I want to really give a shot, more than likely on PC. It's on PC, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to give that a shot on PC and try it out, because I liked what we played in the beta on PS4, even though we tried to make that video and it sucked ass. But aside from that one night, I had fun with that experience. Yeah, so I kind of want to give it a real shot.
This has been a game that I would like to at least try, for sure. The things that I've seen, the updates that they've made, do look really cool. So, like I said, I just...
And it sold very well, to my surprise,
yeah, it
too.
Did.
Like, it exploded.
Uh-huh.
So, that'd be fun.
Yeah, just when do we have the time?
That's a great question. How much is that game? Is it still $60? It's probably close to it if it's still selling well.
Maybe. I mean, we'd have to wait for a sale, I guess, or something. I'm sure there'll be sales with it, inevitably.
Well, Preston, nothing else happened this week. It was probably the most boring week in video games in a very long time.
Oh, man.
So let's talk about our main topic that was also off the cuff because we have no idea what to talk about.
Okay.
Let's talk about why we love gaming on PC.
Okay.
Just in general. Just have a fun conversation about PC gaming.
Okay.
Which is kind of strange for us. I know we've just basically begun our adventure into PC gaming as of recently.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been just wonderful. Let's talk about why. What do you love about PC gaming, Preston? And you're the one with the mega computer right now.
Yeah, and that's why... I 80% love it, and then there's this 20% that makes me want to throw it out the window and burn it. And the main reason that I would feel that way are instances like last night, where, you know, I sit down, I turn it on, I start up Battlefront 2, I get a invite on Discord, and I tab out to accept it, and then I can't tab out into the game, and then I spend the next hour trying to get the game to work. And it's infuriating, because all I want to do is play the game, whereas on console, that's never an issue. You just turn the game on, you accept a party chat, you get in there, and you're playing it. Same thing, you know, like I said, happened with PUBG. There are just a few annoyances. Just getting a game up and running sometimes is just kind of an ordeal, and it makes sense, because, you know, when a developer is making a game for a console, everybody has the same hardware. You know, every PlayStation 4, every PlayStation Pro is the exact same thing. Same thing with the Xbox One and Xbox One X. Whereas, you know, computers, I might have a different CPU, or there's all these several different, you know, graphics cards and different motherboards and, you know, different amount, you know, you might have different, you know, more or less RAM than me and stuff. There's just so many variables with PC gaming. So it is completely understandable that some problems happen. But in terms of my case, where I spend as much money as I did on a PC and things like this happen, it aggravates me even more, because, you know, I bought, you know, what I wanted to be the best thing that you can buy, and when it still has issues, of course, that makes it pretty aggravating. Whereas if I bought something that I knew was, you know, this is okay, or yeah, I kind of skimped out on this or this, that might be why I'm having problems. But, you know, that's not the case with me, so it that definitely makes it more frustrating. Like, for instance, I opened up OBS for the first time on this computer today, and I opened it and it was lagging like crazy, and my entire computer just restarted for no reason. So when it rebooted, it was fine, but why was opening up OBS such an ordeal that I had to restart it? I don't know. It's just things like that are irritating. But those are pretty much the only negative things that I really have to say about it. You know, just the positives are just the things that are, you know, obvious. The games run, not even in terms of looking, they just, you know, run better. Granted, you know, if it's a good port, or you know, there are problems. Like, I'm playing Nier right now, and it's not the best port at all. So I'll be, you know, at 60 frames, and I might have a hiccup every now and then that'll drop it down to 50. Whereas Wolfenstein, for instance, I never even dropped to a, you know, 59 or anything during the entirety of that game. So yeah, if you have a good optimized game, then the performance is better than typically a game that would be, you know, 30 frames per second on console. Just obvious stuff like that. And I've been doing pretty much all my gaming on PC for the past, I don't even know how long I've had this. Has it been 2 months yet? Do you know?
I think it's been over 2 months, yeah.
Okay. Just for as long as I've had the computer, I've pretty much been playing everything that I can on it. And it's really hard to go back to 30 frames now. It's not impossible. I mean, I jumped back into Horizon the Frozen Wilds, and it is shocking initially when you start the game up, and when you're used to seeing, you know, 60 frames. And I know, I'll do a little, you know, side note here. I know computers can go to higher frame rate. My monitor is one of the 4K ones, so I can only, it's a 60 hertz monitor, and I'm fine with that. I've seen games on, you know, 144 hertz monitors that look incredible too, with it just being just the frame rate, it looks so ridiculously smooth. But I'm completely fine with doing 4K at 60, so just a little side note there. Getting used to 60 frames and going back to 30 is pretty shocking. Whereas when I was a full-on console player and I would hear people talking about playing everything at a higher frame rate, I just thought they were really snobby and were exaggerating, but and there are still are snobby people, and I never want to be snobby. I love my PlayStation. I love PlayStation exclusives for the most part, and Nintendo's exclusives as well. I mean, my game of the year was Breath, and none of my game of the years are things that are even at the top of the game of my year, excluding Wolfenstein, are in my game of the year discussion. So good games at 30 frames per second, I'll still take over 60 frames. But I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I would love to play Horizon on PC. I feel like that would make it a better funner experience. Not that Horizon isn't amazing on PlayStation, but a higher frame rate absolutely helps a game. It makes it funner. But yeah, what about you, Garrett?
One sec. I'm good.
Okay.
I love it as well for the obviously the same reasons, but it's funny how I disregarded PC for so long, and we really only jumped into it because I know Jacob went first, and then you got it, and then I got it. And it wasn't because it was like, oh, I got to have what they're having. It was almost like if we're going to do the YouTube thing, we kind of all need to be on the same page as to what we're playing and how we can play together in certain experiences. So it was really almost like a corporate decision in a way that we're like, we all need the PCs now because Jacob's getting one. So we all just kind of jumped the gun when Jacob did. Mm-hmm. But it's funny how you caught the bug before I did, where you bought the pre-built PC. And then you immediately, I mean, granted, you had the opportunity to upgrade, so you've built one of your own, but you've caught the bug as to where upgrading a PC is not only very enjoyable, but it's almost addictive in a way. And I've sort of caught the bug. I know that feeling now because on Black Friday, I bought additional RAM for my PC. And just the I don't know what it is. It's the strangest thing. Just the process of acquiring it and installing it on your own. And then even though you helped me install the RAM, but now that I know how to install things like that, it's almost like now I want to do it again with something else.
Yeah.
So that alone is an enjoyable aspect. And you're right, the frame rate and performance of the games is a huge part of it as well. I mean, I love GTA 5 on console. It was great. It's one of my favorite games from the previous generation. I even love the remastered version on PS4 when I played it again. And GTA Online especially. But just that higher frame rate, man, that silky smooth gameplay on PC and any game I play is just so wonderful. And mouse and keyboard shooting, even though I'm not a master at it, feels amazing, especially in GTA. Because like you said, the aiming is very stiff in that game on console. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can work around it. You can increase the sensitivity and stuff. But PC, man, it's just buttery smooth. I love it. And which is another reason why I'm excited to jump into the Metro Redux collection, because I was just talking about how I wanted to play through those games prior to Metro. I think it's called Exodus coming out next year.
Yeah.
Presumably next year. And the deal you found was $5 for both of them. It's like, that's another beauty of PC is that these deals are constantly happening and you can acquire so many games for so cheap. And I've already amassed a collection of PC games, Divinity Original Sin being one of them. That wasn't a deal, but that game alone is something I also have to get back to that I really enjoyed while I played it. So I'm also excited for the Steam Winter Sale, because for years I've always heard about the winter sales on Steam, and all these PC players would freak out and be like, oh no, I'm going to drain my wallet. And now I'm genuinely excited about the winter sale to participate in that, because everything's really affordable and there's a lot of great games to play out there.
Yeah. Has that already happened?
What's that?
Has the winter sale happened? Or is it not even, it's not even technically winter yet, is it?
I don't know. Someone on the stream the other night told me when it happens. I think it's relatively soon if it's not already happening.
Okay.
I can't remember. That's something I got to look up. I don't know.
I just opened up Steam because I actually want to buy Metro as well, because I would like to play through it again on PC. And oh crap, I think the sale is actually gone now. Yeah, the sale's gone. Dang it, I missed it.
But I thought you had bought it when you sent me that.
No, I just saw it and I realized that you said you were going to play it, so I just sent it on to you. But L.A. Noir's $6.99 right now. It's a pretty good deal.
That's cool. Yeah, that's cool. It's funny if you just make the effort to go search the web for some deals, you're bound to find at least one.
Yeah, for sure.
That's how we acquired Evil Within. Even though Evil Within's an older game, it's cheap on its own. That deal we found when we bought Evil Within was also super cheap.
Yeah, it was like $5.
So I also learned a lesson that day because I accidentally bought the DLC but not the game itself.
Oh, yeah.
So I ended up paying like twice the price to play the game.
Still, even
and I didn't even play it.
Even twice the price is pretty cheap. Yeah, I got pretty far in that game, but I unfortunately didn't finish it. Especially on my new computer, it ran super weird for some reason.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, it was really weird.
I was going to say, I'm surprised the crashes you've been experiencing, because, I mean, granted, you've been playing a lot more PC than I have, so I'm sure it's only a matter of time to experience issues like that, but yeah. I've yet to have a crash in any game on the pre-built PC I have.
Yeah.
PUBG especially, I mean, I'm constantly alt-tabbing out of there, and I haven't had a crash happen yet, so I don't know why that would be.
Yeah, I don't know. It is very frustrating and confusing, and it's typically my computer starts doing weird stuff whenever there's a Windows update, and I just had a Windows update yesterday, so I'm almost certain that has something to do with it. So I don't know if it's because it's trying to update while I'm playing, or the update just messed something up. I don't know. I mean, once I actually start playing games, everything's fine. But for some reason, it just had a freak out yesterday. So hopefully, everything's good now. But yeah.
And this isn't to say that I don't love my PS4 still. And I even love some stuff on Xbox, but I'm stoked for all the PS4 exclusives we have coming.
Yeah,
but anything that's multi-platform, especially coming to PC nowadays, I'll more than likely play it on PC. Like Far Cry 5, we've already determined we're definitely playing on PC.
Yeah.
Pumped for that. So anything I can play on PC nowadays, I'm probably going to play it on there, which in a year ago, I would have never imagined myself saying that. But I think it really takes you having a PC of your own and experiencing what they're capable of to really open your eyes to that. And that's exactly what it is for me. I hadn't played PC games since I was a child, and I had played a couple of shooters in the past and a bunch of generic kiddie PC games, but never anything like we have today. And it's been a whole new world, and I've loved every second of it. And just thinking about it now, I want to go play PUBG or Fortnite. Speaking of Fortnite, I'm sure some of you've heard me say this. I enjoyed Fortnite on PS4, but it's a whole different experience on PC. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
So
especially being able to just plug your PlayStation controller in and play with that.
Yeah, and almost have a console experience just with a game performing twice as well, if not more.
Yeah, I mean, I played
Assassin's Creed. That's why I want to rebuy it on PC and just play it with a controller, because of that higher frame rate.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. In third-person action games, it helps a whole lot with the higher frame rate. Just especially on a PC, being able to manually control the frame rate and actually see for yourself in real time the difference between it. It is staggering how much of a difference it makes.
Totally.
But yeah, I've been playing so many games with, if there is no shooting involved, I'm using a controller for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And Nier and, Assassin's Creed's, controller. You have, like you said, you have that console experience with, better graphical fidelity, higher frame rate, the best of both worlds. And especially with Steam big screen, which I don't know if you've done that yet, but it essentially turns Steam, when you have a controller plugged in, pretty much into a console interface that really makes it feel like a console as well. So
that's convenient.
Yeah, that is really cool. So
nice. But I'm trying to think of anything else to add to this conversation.
But yeah, I know somebody mentioned a while ago when we first started getting into PC games, somebody left a comment saying that he hoped that we didn't get all Master Racy. And I do want to clarify, after, talking, so positively about PC, that no, we don't. We hate, we've been, against the console wars and stuff since day one. So that's definitely, nothing that we're about. I still love my PlayStation and my Switch to death, and you can have good, experiences on anything, and there's good games on everything. But if I have the option to play a game, with higher performance and higher graphical fidelity, I personally want to do that, which is why I went all out on my PC, so I could do things like that. It's just a personal thing. At the end of the day, the game is the same game. So if a good game is really good, it's really good at 30 frames, but it's better at 60.
I agree. Yeah, same thing. I get the PC Master Race joke. I totally get it, but we'll never be like that either, because I'm still pumped to play a lot of things on Switch and PS4.
And we will
I'll inevitably play Halo 6 on Xbox. So
yeah, for sure.
Then again, if it comes to PC, I'll just plug in an Xbox controller to the PC.
Oh, so you will.
Specifically on PlayStation and Switch, there's countless things I'm very excited to play.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I'm hashtag not fanboys with Sony, but I think over... I can't really say it now because Nintendo just absolutely destroyed this year with Odyssey and Zelda, but... I think PlayStation's first party offerings are, especially their studios, are absolutely some of the best in the world, and arguably are the best in the world. So there, I'm still, you know, especially when those start coming out, I'm going to be playing the crap out of my PlayStation, especially when Spider-Man comes out. Are you kidding me?
Oh yeah, I'm freaking out for that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think even people that don't own a PS4 are freaking out for that game.
Yeah. Like, I'll straight up kick my PC out the window once Spider-Man gets here. Like, yeah.
Amen, brother.
Amen. But yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say about it. I'm enjoying my experience so far. Granted, minus the few missteps and stuff, but for the most part, it's just been an amazing experience. So
yeah, likewise. And that's a call out to all of you on PC. Add us on Steam. All of our Steam names, if you haven't already done so, are in the description of every single one of our videos, including our Blizzard names. Granted, I don't play any Blizzard games on PC at the moment. I want to pick up Overwatch in the near future, but all that information is in the description if we're not already friends on those services. It'd be awesome. We can team up in all kinds of games. Maybe it'd be wonderful. But Preston, you want to talk about some community questions to wrap up here?
This is what happens
on a low news week. There's just nothing going on, especially at the end of the year. Next week's going to be our top five games of 2017. That'll be a big topic. And then the following week, in our normal tradition, I don't know if it'll be ready from Nerd Much or not, we'll see, is the top most anticipated games of 2018, which is what we've done for the last 2 years through Nerd Much. It's been awesome. So we look forward to that. But Preston... Actually, I haven't even done the intro to community questions. Thank you to each and every one of you who sent us a community question this week. We greatly appreciate your continued support and adding to the additional discussion at the end of every episode to not only continue the conversation, but to connect with all of you. It's been wonderful. So we greatly appreciate the support. And if you want to reach us for community questions, you can contact us in one of three places. You can email us at itsobviousgaming@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at @obvious_gaming, or you can submit your questions in the Discord channel. Or the Discord section of our, the Ask IOG section of our Discord channel. And always include the hashtag Ask IOG if you want your question run on the show. I am so tired. Number one, Preston, comes from Corey C. He says, "What's up, guys? I made this text way too small to fit it on one page. This was a huge mistake." He says, "I know you guys are wanting a release date for God of War. Amazon has it set to release June 30th, 2018. Do you think this is a leak or just a mix-up? Also, do you think this will be a good summer release versus a spring release? Keep up the good work and content." Corey, we appreciate the support. And Preston, June 30th sounds like a placeholder date that's just kind of sitting there for no reason. Is that what that is?
For what game?
God of War.
That I would have to see. That might be the end of a
quarter of the
year. Yeah, a quarter. Yeah, that might be it. I don't think that just doesn't sound right to me. Even besides,
I'm still convinced it's going to come spring. Even if it's late spring, I think it'll be out this spring.
Yeah, I'd have to actually look into what the publisher's actual like quarters are, but. The easiest way to see if that sounds right or not is just to look at a calendar and see what day that actually lies on. He said it was June 30th?
Yeah.
June
on Amazon, at least the time it was on Amazon for June 30th.
Okay. June 30th is on a Saturday. So no way.
Yeah, definitely not.
That's definitely not.
As far as it affecting the game, between a spring release and a summer release, I don't think it would make a difference because I think the game still, I mean, it looks great. I imagine it will be great, but I don't think that'll affect the game in any way. I think it'll still sell just as well, regardless of when it comes out. I just hope it comes out sooner rather than later, of course.
Yeah.
Because it looks awesome.
Yep.
But yeah, we'll see. Hopefully soon.
Yes.
What are you going to say?
Oh, no. I'm not going to say anything.
Okay. Zero Shadow Fox says, "Did you guys ever play Ninja Gaiden Black? If you did, what do you remember? I remember the stupid ghost fish in the labyrinth level. I hated those things. Also, that badass plasma sword."
I believe Ninja Gaiden Black was only on the original Xbox. And I never had an original Xbox, but I do remember playing the demo for that game at a Circuit City near my house.
And Circuit City.
At a Circuit City, and that's the only thing I can honestly remember at. But I know it is known as a very difficult game.
I played, yeah, just like the other Ninja Gaidens I tried back in the day. They were also very difficult.
Yeah, I played Ninja Gaiden 2, I think. It was the one that me and you kind of played at the same time. Yeah.
And I got stuck on that kangaroo boss, the big skeleton kangaroo.
I don't know if he was a kangaroo, but he was a big skeleton.
Yeah, I could have sworn he was a kangaroo. Maybe it was something else. Maybe he was a T-Rex or something. I don't know.
I don't remember, but I do remember I was able to beat him because he got stuck on a wall. So I kind of...
Yeah, you got to glitch through it, and I was stuck on it forever.
I did beat the game, though. I did beat it. I remember the final boss was in this giant volcano, and I miraculously beat it. So...
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I never did so. That's my only experience with Ninja Gaiden was that one title. I don't remember which one it was. Maybe it was two, like you said. I don't know.
Yeah.
The Ace of Spades, Preston. Ace of Spades 70, to be exact. What's up, Baconators? Overwatch has released their new skins for the holiday, and like always, Blizzard never fails to impress. From your memory, what gaming character has been attractive in design? What was the character that had a texture / skin / design that fit them by personality, looks, culture, etc.? What game character made you go, ah, to it for any reason at all? Keep up the good work. And keep shaking bacons. I had bacon last night at about 3 a.m. at Majestic Diner in Atlanta.
Oh, wow.
It was perfectly crispy.
I had bacon this morning.
It sounds great.
That's pretty good. 2B.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She's a good character. I'm just kidding.
Cool, man.
Man, that is an interesting question. Do you have anything that might spark my...
Batman?
Batman?
I love the design of Arkham Batman. Specifically, Arkham Knight Batman.
Yeah, Arkham Knight Batman looks badass.
I think Aloy looks cool for the most part. Except for weird headdresses she puts on. I don't know. I'm bad at questions like this. I have no idea. Design of a character that made me scream, essentially. I think the Doom Slayer in 2016 Doom looks fantastic.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I think his design is awesome.
You can probably guess what I'm doing right now to draw inspiration, Preston.
Yeah, just looking around your room. I think that the Twilight Princess design of Link is super badass. I think
it's the coolest design of Link I've seen.
Yeah.
Now, he can look very cool in Breath of the Wild, too, mixing and matching outfits. But
yeah,
I think overall,
that wild
adult
child
Link
outfit
from Twilight Princess looks the coolest. What'd you say?
The wild child outfit, the one you get for doing all the shrines.
Wild Child, Tunic of the Wild. That outfit, I'm sorry, man. I know it's supposed to be like classic Link, but it looks so stupid to me.
I disagree. I think it looks awesome.
I think they should have given you a way more modern, badass looking version. I know it's a callback, but they should have given you like a really awesome version of like a modern Zelda suit. Or not Zelda, Link suit.
How dare you?
But oh well.
How dare you?
I rocked the same outfit in that entire game. I wore the Royal Guard armor chest piece. With the black hood and cape and just the normal khaki pants and boots.
I can't do that. He doesn't look Link enough.
I understand that completely.
Yeah.
But then again, I've only played a few Zelda games in my day, so it was okay for me.
Dude, my uncle just beat Ocarina of Time for the first time. Thought it was
nice. How many years did it take him? Because it took me, obviously, like over a decade.
Not that long. It only took him a few months. He was playing it on and off. But he absolutely loved it. I always love talking with somebody playing through Zelda especially Ocarina of Time for the first time, just hearing their experience of going through the water temple and stuff. I love discussing that. But what was funny, I never heard from anybody, but the temple that gave him the most trouble was the Shadow Temple.
Interesting.
I've never heard that out of anybody before, so he was definitely giving me a unique perspective. But he beat it, loved it. He says Breath of the Wild is one of his favorite games of all time. So I'm slowly turning him into a Zelda fanboy.
And he used to make fun of you for playing the fairy game.
I know. He's like, he always used to make fun of Link looking like an elf running around with fairies. And look at him now. Mm-hmm. Look what I've done to him.
Totally converted him.
Absolutely. Man, this is really hard because I feel like I have looked at a lot of video game characters and I'm like, man, you look freaking badass, but I can't think of any. I think Mega Man X.
I think
Mega Man
Corvo
X looks
cool.
Awesome.
Who?
Mega Man X.
Oh, yeah. Mega Man X is my favorite Mega Man design by far.
He looks so cool.
Especially with his upgraded armor. He looks cool.
Mm-hmm.
I think Corvo from Dishonored looks cool.
He looks awesome.
There are so many characters that I think looks cool. That I think look cool. I just can't think of them off the top of my head.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
Yep, that's all I have to say.
Those are the ones that stand out to me. A lot of the assassins from Assassin's Creed look pretty cool,
yeah,
too.
Oh, yeah. They do.
Sam Harris says, "Hey, you beautiful boys."
Hi.
I think it's the kindest adjective he's used to describe us in a long time. We appreciate it, Sam. When allocating stats in an RPG, what are y'all's priorities? Is it max attack, max magic, max abilities? Or do you like a balanced character? Love to hear your thoughts, and remember, keep running.
I guess it depends on the game, because recently, in any RPG that gives me a charisma option, I'm all in on charisma. I love being able to, you know, have a silver tongue and just convince anybody to do what I want them to do and get out of situations just by talking. I love doing that. Primarily just in just my latest playthrough of Fallout, I dumped all my points into charisma. I can't think of other games where that gives me an option. I guess did Dragon Age have that? I don't know. If it's ever an option, I'm going to dump it into charisma. But besides that, I don't really like magic that much. I've never been like I've never mained a healer or a wizard or anything like that. They just don't really call to me. I would love to play as one of those characters because I feel like a majority of people don't like using magic as much as people that like to just, you know, be a melee character, you know, a DPS or a tank. So I wish, you know, I would like to do magic. And I've tried several times. I cannot even tell you how many times I've started up Skyrim saying, all right, this is my mage build. I'm going to strictly stick to magic. And then 30 minutes in, I whip out a sword and I'm just having magic with one hand. And then I end up just sword and shield and using a bow. So I'll typically, you know, stay away from magic if I can. But I guess it honestly just depends on the RPG, but those are kind of just the very, you know, broad things that I can say.
It depends on the game for me. In Elder Scrolls, for example, I will sometimes focus on conversation and charisma, but mostly just ranged. Like in Elder Scrolls specifically, I'll focus on ranged and just melee combat. I just want to be a total tank, essentially. And Fallout, I'll focus on, again, ranged weapons. I don't know who would focus on melee weapons in Fallout. That's like so pointless to me. But in Fallout, especially dialogue, I'm the same way with magic. I don't care at all about magic. I never have. I don't know why. I've tried to get into I want to be a magic character to be different and have it be an entirely new experience, but I can never stick to it for some reason. I just want to slice something up with a sword or shoot it with an arrow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's pretty much the same for me. Everything you just said.
Excellent.
So, unfortunately, you and I share a lot of the same opinions on a lot of things.
Yes.
So. Oh, well. Bohungales, Kyle says, "Why hello, you sexy cuties." Man, we got beautiful boys and sexy cuties today. And we got baconators.
What a great
lot
day.
Of great adjectives today. Death Stranding around the corner. With Death Stranding around the corner, what do you guys think of the information we have so far? With this information, what type of game you think we might have on our hands here? Narrative adventure like Uncharted or open world RPG? I think anything is possible, but I'm excited to hear your guys' opinion. And I don't want the I can't think of anything excuse. I'm not creative. Just some good old speculation. Keep it sexy, boys.
Now, let me ask you this right off the bat, Garrett. Did you by chance read any articles with Kojima talking about some gameplay mechanics that came out after PSX?
No, because I do not care at all.
Okay.
I don't care about Death Stranding at all until I see it in action. I don't want to hear people talk about it. I don't want to see another stupid trailer. So play the game and then I will care.
I unfortunately can't remember everything, but I suggest you at least reading the short article that explains a few things because it actually sounds really cool.
So describe it to me.
I'll try to describe it to you as much as I can offhand, just off of memory, but there's this stuff called Timefall, but it's rain that I believe ages anything that's touching it. So there's like a gameplay mechanic with that. That's the only thing I remember offhand. There was so much other stuff that I can't remember, but the way he was describing it, it sounded insanely interesting to me.
So when you say gameplay mechanic, is it a way where, say, there's an enemy and you can just make the rain come down and it'll age him till he dies?
No, I don't think you actually use the rain. I think it's a part of the world.
So, oh no, it's raining. You should probably take cover while it's raining or wear a suit or something.
I don't know. The thing though is that there was also something people noticed about the trailer where Norman Reedus wasn't being affected by things, whereas the other people were. So people are speculating that he might have something or he might be a special person. People are speculating that device that's on your back is going to be used in combat in terms of aiming. Because I don't know if you noticed when he whipped out his pistol and was aiming towards the guy crawling away, the thing on his shoulder was also pointing at it as well. So I'm sure that's going to have some sort of a gameplay mechanic. But I think I have a feeling that it's probably going to be kind of open worldish. I think something's telling me that he already mentioned that it would be.
I remember him saying that back in the day.
Yeah, obviously it's going to be a shooter, but I think there are going to be a lot of weird... Oh, yeah. Dude, here's another gameplay mechanic. So, I just remembered. So, when you die, you don't actually die. When he was floating in the water, that is what's going to happen when you die in the game. You're going to go into the water, and it's going to be first person. And you have to swim back to your body. And I don't know if there's going to be like if it's going to be harder or easier, depending on what kills you or anything. But once you get back to your body, you will be awoken. But it's not a restart. Time is still continued. So even when you die, things are still progressing in the game. You just, you know, continue. I don't know if what the negative repercussions are going to be, but that's one of the mechanics that he talked about. So that
kind of hints at the title Death Stranding in a sense.
Yeah. I know the big thing that he's talking about is there's strands connecting people. That's like the main thing of the game. I'm sure the baby has to do with something. I haven't watched the trailer, but I think somebody said that that device on his back was only working for the guy that had the baby with him. So I don't know if that baby, if there's things that have to do with time, if they're protecting that baby because in the future it's important or it can do things in the current time they're in and those creepy guys that are floating are trying to get him. I'm not exactly sure about that, but the baby itself might have some gameplay mechanics. Because I know Norman Reedus had a giant cut at himself to get the baby out. So I don't know if you actually play the game with him inside you, which is why you're able to have any powers that are associated with the baby or not. And I don't know. Like you said, the trailer's so weird.
You can upgrade your baby for additional abilities.
Pay the microtransaction to up your
for
baby.
New babies.
Yeah. What are some things you would at least want from this game, having at least played Metal Gear Solid 5?
I mean, that game just feels very good to play.
Yeah. And I'm sure.
So I imagine it'll feel just as good to play Death Stranding. I figured that little thing coming off their back would have something to do with combat. I don't know, dude. Just anything about Death Stranding is just whatever to me. I mean, everything you're saying sounds cool.
Well, I'll read you a little quote from an IGN article where they discussed the gameplay mechanics with Kojima. This is a quote from him. Games started over 40 years ago with arcades. When the player dies, it's game over. You continue and time goes back to before you die. You can die as many times as you want, but you always go back to the little bit before you die. That was a mechanic made specifically for putting in coins, and it hasn't changed since then. I want people to realize that when they die in the game, that this isn't the end. One of the themes of the game is life and death, so I want people to realize that when they... I just said that. So it's not game over when you die. You're transported to a purgatory where you're free to explore in first person. Because of some mysterious, unique abilities that Sam, who is Norman Reedus, possesses, you can wander outside of your body, recovering items, among other things. As Kojima explains, at that point, you're not dead or alive. It's the equivalent of that screen that says continue and a counter ticking down to zero. When you return to the world of the living, you can get back into your body. However, unlike most games, which set you back to a point before you die, Death Stranding acknowledges your defeat and seems to embrace it. You're transported back to the world after your death, like in Dark Souls or roguelites, where your actions maintain an aura of persistence. The mechanic of dying is ambiguous in video games, but it sounds as though Kojima is implementing systems inspired by purgatory and reincarnation as well. So as you saw in the trailer, you saw the crater in the ground, and when you come back, it's still there. Most games would have taken you back before the crater was made. So depending on the player, you might have a lot of craters all over the place, depending on the player. Death will never put you out of the game, Kojima finally stated. Then there's this Timefall, which is not of the world. It's called Timefall. It's an integral part of Death Stranding's story and lore. Most people in the game are aware of the rain, and well, Norman is quite unique in this regard. I think I should stop there. I'm spilling the beans. When we asked if his Timefall had anything to do with the reoccurring motive of Sam crying, Kojima joked, "The tears, that's really only because he's sad right now." So yeah, something has to do with Timefall. So people are aware of it and scared of it, but it doesn't affect Norman Reedus. So I don't think it's going to be a mechanic of us running and hiding from it. It might affect combat and us battling people. It might aid us, or who knows, it might... not, you know, it might make things harder for us or whatever. The baby relates to the game mechanics as well as the story. They're speculating here. It seems like the shoulder-mounted robotic arms attached to Sam and his corpse disposal team sparked with life when the person came into possession of the baby. There's an entire massive article on IGN that goes into really depth about these things. But reading things like that, just because we haven't heard anything gameplay-wise, that's been pure speculation, just getting little tips and stuff like that do make it seem pretty interesting. And like we kind of discussed last week, just knowing that, just having Hideo's track record, primarily with Metal Gear Solid 5, just like you said, how fun it is to play and just how smooth it is to play and just how... he is, you know, good at, you know, he is good at making a good gameplay experience, even if the story is crazy. That is the main thing that sounds interesting and fun to me, and hearing just little tidbits of different types of, you know, mechanics in this game make me, you know, excited about it.
Yeah, all those things sound very interesting.
Yeah.
I just want to see them in action, which I imagine we'll see, if not at E3 next year, soon after that.
Yeah, I mean, Mark Cerny.
Why would we not see something at E3 by next year? There has to be the slightest demo at E3 next year.
This E3 coming up could be crazy. If we see The Last of Us gameplay, Death Stranding gameplay, I'm sure it's going to be a huge Spider-Man push here. If that's what I'm assuming is, if it's not coming out in 2019, it'll be holiday season. So yeah, that could be a crazy E3. But yeah, I mean, I am like you, where I do want to see it before I get hyped, but I actually don't mind the trailers at all. I think they are, as weird as they are, they interest me a lot. So I am very interested to see, you know, just excited to see this game, what it is.
As am I. I mean, even just hearing him talk about those weird mechanics kind of makes me want to go play. Even though it's a much more tame game, it seems, compared to Death Stranding, it makes me want to play a bit more Metal Gear Solid 5.
Yeah.
But... yeah, I'm not going to say I'm not excited for it, but I think I'll be genuinely excited when we see it in action. Right now, it just moderately has my interest,
yeah.
But all that stuff does sound very cool.
Yeah, and there's no point in getting insanely hyped for this game, you know, with it probably being released in, you know, another lifetime, so.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's all the community questions this week. This was a very laid back week, minimal news, very short topic, but I enjoyed your presence nonetheless, Preston. Everyone tuning in, thank you for doing so. It's been one of those weird weeks, but next week will be a much bigger topic and we're excited about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's all for me, Preston. I literally have nothing else to say.
Oh, wow. Fine. Well, like Garrett said, if you want to send us questions, probably the best area for us to submit those questions is our Discord channel. We have an Ask IOG section, and you can drop any questions you want, or you can go to Twitter using the hashtag AskIOG, hashtag, that's what the kids call them, or email us at itsobviousgaming@gmail.com. We occasionally do streams as well. You can find our, if you just go to Twitch, search for It's Obvious Gaming, find us at youtube.com/It's Obvious Gaming, and please subscribe to us. I haven't checked our subs in a while, but our big goal of this year was to reach 2,000, and we are very within reach. We have about three more.
I think we're less than 20 away. I think we're less than 20. No, we're nearing 20 away.
Okay.
We're like 24 away right now.
So we have about, 3 weeks left?
I believe so.
Or 2 weeks. Yeah. Two, 3 weeks. Not a ton of time, but it's definitely feasible to get, 20 or a little over, subs before the end of that. So if you could, recommend us to your friends, or just go on iTunes and leave us a review, just anything like that would definitely help us in terms of reaching out to anybody else that could potentially subscribe to us and jump in the It's Obvious community. So we would definitely be appreciative of that. But I think that's pretty much all we have to talk about today, and all the only thing I have to say. So are there any An ending message you'd like to say, or you about done?
Just the usual. Thanks for joining us. It's always an absolute pleasure, and we can't wait to connect with you guys either on YouTube or Twitch this week. You can look forward to live streams and at least a Let's Play or two leading up to Christmas. So pumped to hear from you guys. I hope you all have a wonderful week.
Absolutely. We'll check you guys next time.
See ya.